So welcome back to episode 2 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. Today we have a bit of a Christmas special, but on behalf of Callum, Tom and I just want to wish you all a Merry, Merry Christmas and also say thank you for tuning in to episode 1. We had some great feedback. We've even got some listeners' questions today, so we're keen to get the audience involved a bit more in today's episode. So boys, what does Christmas Day look like for you guys?
Christmas has changed a little bit over the last few years, to be honest. Since having my daughter, it's kind of all revolves around her. So it's a nice little, fairly low key family affair these days. But I'm all here for it.
That sounds nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the same, but in the opposite direction. So everyone in my house now, all my siblings, were all a bit more grown up. So the magic of Christmas is fading. It's more about what you can eat and drink these days.
My Christmas was pretty chaotic this year. It was with Meg's family, my girlfriend, and there was 22 of us around the table for Christmas dinner, which was eventful, all crammed into one little room. Just about had enough space to get access to your Christmas dinner, but it was definitely a one-hand job instead of
the
two.
That's one way of putting it. I tell you what, before we get onto the running stuff, speaking of Christmas dinners, what's your top two or top three items on the plate? What are you both putting on
Well, take it away, Ben. I'm going to need to think about this one.
Oh, yeah, I was thinking the same. You know what? The stuffing this year was really good.
Yeah, unreal shout. Yeah.
Stuffing is always like a good meaty stuffing. It's got to be roast potatoes, really. You can't have a roast dinner without roast potatoes.
You know, I don't know if we're counting gravy as an item, but I'm putting that as like probably number one, to be honest. Yeah,
of course you can.
Gravy's probably my favourite thing.
If someone forgot the gravy, that would be chaos.
It'd be like eating a plate of sand, wouldn't it?
Great. To be fair, gravy is everyone would normally go for some nice crispy roasties or your Yorkshire puddings, but the gravy is really the vessel that like brings it all together, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah. I think it's the gravy.
It's the Vaporflies, isn't it? That's what it's like. You got to get it right on race day.
It's got to be good gravy, though. It's got to be the secret sauce. It's got to be homemade, quite chunky. I think have some bits of veg floating around in there.
Oh yeah, of course.
Bit of texture.
Right, onto the running then, I guess. Who had an exciting week? Anyone in particular?
I had kind of a different week. I wouldn't say exciting.
Go on, Ben, give us your different week.
A start.
Go ahead.
Walking through from Monday, I just went out for a 10k easy run. A little bit. Well, I've called it 10k steezy. It was sort of in between an easy and steady run, around 4 minutes per kilometer. Was feeling good. It's nice to get out in the sunshine. And then I didn't run again in the evening just due to family plans and stuff. Then it came to Tuesday and I did one of my favorite sessions actually, on the treadmill. It's called I call it an under over threshold session. So basically the concept is you do 10 minutes at under threshold. So around 20 seconds per kilometer under your threshold and then 10 minutes above threshold. So about 5 to 10 seconds per kilometer faster than threshold. And you sort of alternate between the two zones for 50 minute continuous session.
Nice.
And it's something I've done throughout my training for the half marathon. And I've found quite a lot of success doing it. You can get quite a lot of intensity in 50 minutes of work, which I quite enjoy. So I did that one on Tuesday morning. And then Tuesday evening, I went down to the track in Chelmsford and I jumped in with my friend Luke. He was doing a fairly similar session. It was sort of 5 minutes on at his tempo pace, which was around 3:35 per kilometer, and then 5 minutes off. So two sessions that day. Second session in the evening was a little bit lower intensity because that was more of Luke's session. I just wanted to get down to the track and jump in with him, just purely for the social aspect of it. But towards the end of the session, I noticed my left quad was getting quite tight. I think this is probably the first high mileage sort of double session day I've done since the Valencia Marathon. And I just don't think my body was quite ready for it. So I had a bit of tightness in the quad, which followed through to the Wednesday.
Quick question, Ben. I think everyone always comments on your like when you do sessions on treadmills about how accurate your watch is and stuff because you have it on the treadmill mode. But what I was just wondering is, do you do a warm-up or a cool-down on the treadmill, and do you put that on Strava if you do, or do you kind of just jump on and just get on with it kind of thing?
For most of the time, I do a warm-up and cool-down on the treadmill, just nice and easy. I don't always record it. But for this type of session, I start with 10 minutes at under threshold, so it's sort of a steady effort, and that's sort of, and there's 10 minutes of that, so I thought I didn't actually do a solid, like, easy warm-up, if you like, for that session.
Because I looked at I was saying, obviously, that's two massive sessions. That's like, you know, 19 miles on the day or something. So I was thinking, God, if he's also done a warm-up and a cool-down, that'll be through the roof. Yeah. But yeah, no, solid sessions.
Yeah, no worries. No warm-up or cool-down for the morning session, but we did have a warm-up as such for the evening one. But yeah, like I said, a bit of tightness in the leg. So I decided on Wednesday to do an hour on the cross trainer, just nice and easy. I always go to the gym for around about an hour because that's when my housemate Charlie goes to the gym as well. And he goes for about an hour. So that always makes good use of the time. And then Thursday, I also did more cross training just because my quad was still feeling really tight and there's a bit of soreness in sort of the center of it. It's just a bit of a niggle, but it was one of those that I could have run through, but I wanted to just make sure I ironed that out before jumping into more training, hopefully in the weeks to come, looking forward to Osaka.
Have you had this niggle before, Ben? I remember last week you were talking about a bit of a calf niggle that you've sort of had previously. Is it common for you to get this kind of quad tightness, or was this out of
It's not uncommon. No, I've had it a few times before, and it's usually something that takes maybe a week, sometimes 2 weeks to clear up. It's almost like a little bit of a sprain, but it's just a sign that I need to ease off some of the mileage, really. And I can usually jump on the cross trainer or the bike, and there's no discomfort at all. And for me, I feel like I can basically maintain my fitness on those sort of cross training equipment rather than just risking running more and making your niggle turn into an injury. So it's something I've learned along the way of just being sensible, really, with when I feel something's not quite right to back off a little bit.
Yeah, nice.
So that takes me on to Friday. So Friday morning, I went out for an easy run just to see how my hamstring was feeling. And I could still feel it a little bit. So instead of doing my planned session, which was 20 by a minute, sort of a 20 by 400 meters session, I decided to go down to the gym again. And that was a pretty tough session to do on the cross trainer. I was pretty jelly legged after that. So that was definitely worth jumping on there instead of getting out on the road and making any injury worse. That brings me to Saturday, which was Christmas Eve. Which was my opportunity to get a park run in over the festive period. I was down at my local park run dressed as Father Christmas. And I clocked a 16:34 park run dressed as Santa, which I was pretty chuffed with. And there was no pain in my hamstring, my left leg. So I was pretty chuffed with that as well, because I thought it was a bit of a risk to go and run a fairly hard effort at park run. But thankfully, the time off during the week with the cross trainer had obviously worked wonders and given that leg a little bit of time to recover.
Were you specifically going for a time here, or were you just kind of like, just do a hard effort or what? Because I know you'd put a lot on Instagram about the Santa world record, stuff like that. What was the aim?
Yeah, I just fancied doing a park run dressed as Santa, to be honest with you. Just thought it was a bit of fun content to film over the festive period. I just ended up going for it a bit more than I had planned to on the day. But felt good wearing the Alpha Flies, which always helped.
Yeah, they match
fast.
Perfectly. I'm looking. Yeah, right, they did now. Indeed. They actually look sick with the Santa outfit.
I was going to say, I'm glad that you really committed to the outfit as well. Like, no half-arsing it with just like a little Santa's hat and a beard.
I fully went for it.
Yeah.
Brought the full kit from Amazon.
See, I respect that about you, Ben. You never do anything by halves.
No, not at all. But I had a little look at the world record for fastest Santa for the marathon. And at the moment, it's 2 hours and 49 minutes. So that's something for next year, I reckon. Valencia Marathon dressed as Santa.
That's a training run for you, that, Ben. Training run. You can do that on the weekend.
Yeah. It is a little bit difficult in the outfit. I'm not going to lie. It's quite restrictive, especially in the legs, because the long trousers. So maybe I can get a custom sampler outfit
the chafing,
made for next year.
You've got to be careful with the chafing and that. Yeah.
And overheating as well with that fluffy Santa hat on.
It definitely was for 5K, you could pretty much within reason wear anything to run 5K, but over the marathon,
it might be a little bit different.
Get sore to whip you up a Santa's outfit. Yeah. They'll probably do that, wouldn't they?
I reckon so. Custom singlet. I don't know if that would count as a Santa outfit for the world record, though. I think there's like some criteria that you have to actually meet for it to
be considered. Oh, it's so strenuous.
Considered.
We'll save this for another pod, but I actually got accepted to try and break the mile world record wearing handcuffs when I was in America.
Oh, my God.
A bit kinky.
And you're telling me. And the document that they sent over of things you have to do to get it officially ratified is honestly not even worth, it's like not worth doing.
Really?
You've got to get down to come and watch how you've got to get all the handcuffs checked, all of this stuff. It was like, we'll read through it on a future episode when we're struggling for context. Yeah. I'm telling you, it's pretty crazy.
Do you know what? Funnily enough, we also tried to, we're going to break the world records for the fastest marathon dressed as a running shoe at London, just gone in October. And Amazing. Similar, like between the costume build and the actual, like loops that you had to jump through, it was agonizing. So you had to bin it off in the end. Anyway, that's your Saturday, Ben.
Yep. And then on Sunday was Christmas Day, and I actually decided to have a rest day this day because just had Lovely. So much to try and fit in with family. Trying to get down to another park run wasn't really realistic this year. So yeah, that was my week. Sunday was a day off.
Good lad. I like the fact you had that day off, you know. I think that's good. A lot of people run just for the sake of running, don't they? Which is good.
Yeah.
You got the work done in the week, so you could have the
exactly.
day off.
Exactly.
I like that.
Got to see my nan on Christmas Day.
Yeah,
which
perfect.
Which was definitely worth missing that second park run.
Yeah, and I think if you look at your week, like you say, it's been a little bit of a different one, but overall it comes together really nicely when you've got like your double session day, you've got some cross training in the mix, you've got your park run on the Saturday, and then a nice rest.
It's
a good
and
week.
The
what
main
was your mileage?
For me was coming out of it sort of like injury free because I went in at the start of the week. I was like, oh, this leg doesn't feel quite right. So I was keen to get that sorted, especially looking ahead with training ramping up a little bit. So I think my mileage was probably the lowest it's been for a long time, actually. I think it was only around 50 kilometers, but with about 3 or 4 hours of cross training as well. So that will bring it up aerobically. But yeah, that was my week.
Nice. I like it.
Quality.
Who's up next?
Tom,
I might as well go next.
Yeah, you had a short week last week, and I've just scrolled through your Strava, and it looks pretty juicy, actually. So I'm excited for this.
Yeah, well, yeah, I might as well. You guys can sandwich me with some proper running. But this was actually a better week. This was actually a better week than last week. I'm finally feeling back to like 100% in myself, which is really good.
It's good to hear.
After that whole winter period was just constant on-off illness where you wake up and feel a bit like rotten one morning, and then you've got the sniffles. And you know when you're running and your chest just feels a bit tight and you just don't feel great whilst you're running? Finally feel like I've shifted that completely now. So
happy days.
Monday, I've titled this one exceptionally soggy because it was very wet. It was very, very wet. It's one of those where you're so wet within the first couple of minutes that it really doesn't matter anymore. But anyway, just an easy 30 minutes at 4:31 pace. Nothing really to write home about there. Just trying to kickstart the week and build some consistency again. And then the Tuesday, we had a little progression run, so a little progression 5 miles. One thing that I really enjoyed about this one is it was a textbook progression from 1K to the next. And for context sake, for all of these runs, whether it's an easy run, whether it's like a steady run, anything other than a session, basically, I don't look at my watch at all. I just keep it covered and go off effort because ultimately, easy is meant to just feel easy, right? And then easy to steady, like this one was. You know, again, there's no set pace for it. It's just whatever feels right. So I was quite happy to see some beautiful blue bars on this one. but anyway, that was just over 8K. Started at 4:34 per K and finished at 3:34 per K, which, nice. To be fair, was it was definitely quicker than steady by the end for my current fitness levels. But I enjoyed it. It felt good to get the legs ticking over. And after the previous week where I blew up and effort level was through the roof, it was nice to tick a run off like this where it just felt pretty nice. It felt pretty good. So yeah, positive one there. And finished off with 4 by 100 meter strides, which is pretty standard for Andy to do like before a session day. So yeah, decent day there. And then on the
And just
Wednesday, go on, Callum.
for the listener's sake, why does Andy give you those strides, Tom? Because I do the same, but do you want to expand a little?
Yeah. So I haven't quizzed him on it in great detail, but it's fairly straightforward. Essentially, before a session day, we'll always do something other than easy running. So it'll be like a progression run plus strides. I think it just primes you better for that session. Gets the legs firing, gets you kind of, I guess biomechanically, it gets you moving at a faster clip. It drills down like decent form, and I think it just blows off the cobwebs a bit. If you've had like a long run on the Sunday, and then an easy run on the Monday, to get the legs turning and to get things ticking over, to get the heart rate up, just makes you feel a bit more prepared, I think, when it comes around to that
100%,
session.
yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
I feel the exact same. Yeah, it just opens everything up a little bit. I think it's really good. More people should do them, I think.
Yeah. Strides. Yeah. I love strides. They're one of those where when you finish a run, yeah, it's so easy to sack them off. It's so easy just not to
Yeah,
do like a few hundred meters
sure.
worth of strides. But every single time I do them, I'm grateful that I have, because you just feel so much more, I just activated, I suppose, afterwards. So yeah, do your strides, everybody. So then, yeah, Wednesday, this was a fairly exciting day for me, to be honest, because it's the first little baby session I've done for a fair few weeks. So exciting and daunting at the same time. But yeah, so did about 2.5K warm up. So that's including like drills and strides and all that good stuff. And then the actual session itself was a 10 by 400, off 100 meters recovery. So 100 meters, I'm sure you boys know that goes by very, very quickly. So sort of, I think between about 30 and 45 ish seconds, which again, for me, not being very fit at the moment, is, yeah, that feels like click your fingers and you're back into another rep. But with this, I was thinking when I was jogging down to do this session, like with the paces that I had prescribed, which for these 400s were alternating 80 and then 85, it's a tricky one for the ego, because that's a solid like 10 to 15 seconds slower than what I was doing for 400s like over the summer. It's not a lot of volume, and it's, yeah, you really have to check your ego, I think, when you're coming back from a long layoff and when you're feeling unfit,
Yeah,
because
and I think you're right. I think the other thing is that Andy's clearly given you a slightly slower pace than what you're capable of, but with a shorter recovery, in the idea that it's going to give you a better training effect overall running at that slower pace than if you did run, say, 75 seconds and you just smashed yourself on every rep. You're not actually going to get as fit. You might feel like you're working harder, but you're going to be working too hard. You see what I mean? So I think when you're coming back, it's about sitting on that kind of red line or like just below it and just getting the consistency back, which, is exactly what you said at the start of the week. That's your main aim. Just get all the sessions ticked off. No hero workouts. Just get it done.
Yeah, exactly. You're dead right. It's one of those where I think for me at the moment, and I think for most people, to be honest, when you finish a session like this where you're not training for anything specific, you're not in the thick of like a big training block, you want to just finish these sessions and feel good, and feel good during as well, I think. Like you say, I probably could have kicked down on the last couple of reps and gone, like low 70s for them, but there would be absolutely no point, because I'd have battered myself, basically. So yeah, I won't go through every single split, but I hit what I needed to. Felt pretty good doing so. Those 80-second reps actually felt, I know it was a good level for me at the moment, because it actually felt a lot faster than what I would have liked them to have done. But yeah, it was just nice to tick it off. So in total, that was, yeah, 5K session, 3:48 average with those short recoveries. But yeah, 80 to 85 seconds for each of those 400s.
Solid. This
And
loop
then
that
just a couple
that
K
you
cool
do
down.
the you do the session on, what's that like? How do you find pacing yourself on it looks like
A crescent.
a little cul-de-sac.
I was hoping you'd ask this question. So this is Southway Road, which for any local runners to like the
To
Bradford-on-Avon
Wiltshire.
and Bath and Wiltshire area, this is like our E10. It's the home of champions for Wiltshire. So it's Southway Road is essentially it's right next to the Sainsbury's and it's about an 890 meter loop. But it's fairly traffic free. It's just a housing estate. Like the main curve of that loop is just a pretty quiet housing estate. So you can run on the road. The pavement on the other side is pretty wide, and it's probably the only place like local to me where it's flat. It's long enough to do kind of slightly longer reps and shorter reps without it being tedious. And there's no brutal sharp corners. Like there's a couple of fairly tight turns on it, but apart from that, it's just a pretty solid loop. So most of my sessions, especially this time of year where it's the country lanes are often flooded or really muddy, it's a great little loop to have on the doorstep. So Southway Road, if you're ever in the area, and need somewhere to do a session.
Yeah, I've been looking for a place for my January training camp, so I might give it
See if they've got an Airbnb on the route, that'd be great.
a go. Tom.
You know what? I was actually going to say, on the Tuesday, I had a little like flat viewing afterwards, just a rental still, but that's I'm pretty sure I've got it. So it's a fairly it's quite a nice little place. So if anyone fancies a spring training camp in the picturesque town of Bradford-on-Avon in Wiltshire, let me know and we'll sort it out.
Yeah,
Amazing.
$5,000 a week.
Yeah, I run it three ways. There we go. We'll do a retreat. A little
Yeah. Ben can lead
sweat
cross
elite are off
training.
to Kenya. We're off to Wiltshire.
Yeah.
Sounds
Boy,
great.
don't knock it. Lovely part of the world. Anyway, couple K cool down. And yeah, that was Wednesday. It's a solid day. And then Thursday was a rest day. Even in kind of a big training block, Thursdays are always either it will either be like rest or easy 5 miles, that kind of deal. So you can decide what you want to do. I almost always take the easy 5 miles option. But at the moment it was a mandatory rest day just to make sure that after 2 days of slightly faster running that I'm not used to, I guess that the body pulls up all okay. Which
Sounds
it did.
smart.
Yeah, which it did, which was nice. So brings us to the Friday, which again just an easy 30 minutes, 4:38 pace there. And yeah, covering the ground quite nicely on that one. Nothing much more to say about
I'm
that.
noticing from your Strava, Tom, that majority of your running are on exactly the same route, sort of out and back. Is that intentional
Oh
or just because of where you live or
is that your Moy Ben Road?
rolling
Yeah,
hills of Kenya?
precisely. No, do you know what? It's difficult because what I'm used to doing is like an easy hour. So that'll be 12 and a half, 13K, something like that. And in that sense, I've got loops which are exactly like an hour loop or a 10 mile loop or 15 mile loop, and they're nice and different and varied. But for these shorter runs are killing me because for 30 minutes, there's not really an
Can't
awful
really
lot.
get anywhere in 15
No,
minutes.
no. And it's so hilly around here as well that if I wanted to do, if I'm doing an hour, I'll go straight up a ridiculously steep hill, and then you've got rolling hills around country roads and do a nice little loop. But for 30 minutes, you're basically going to run straight up a hill and then straight back down it again. So yeah, I was thinking that looking through Strava, every single one of these runs pretty much is
Just a straight
the
line.
exact same out and back. But to be fair, it works out quite well because it does roll a little bit. So you go up pretty much straight uphill and then it flattens out. Then you go downhill and then you turn around and do the reverse of it. So for me, just to try and get a little bit of extra stimulus, I suppose, from the hills, it's worth doing. But then
Yeah,
yeah,
definitely.
Saturday, this was a very late run. So 9:15 in the evening for
Oh,
this,
wow, yeah.
on Christmas Eve. So yeah, I had my daughter for Christmas Eve this year, and yeah, I just wanted to make the most of that time, to be honest. So I wasn't going to sneak out early in the morning for a run. I wanted to be there when she woke up and all that good stuff. So we had a very, very full on day. where, as it should do, nutrition and everything else went out the window. And yeah, she ended up getting picked up a lot later than expected, which made this run a lot later. And it was one of those where I thought, no one cares if you run on Christmas or not. Like, it's, you know, there's not much to gain from running at this kind of time of night, especially with a stomach full of pom bears and sausage rolls and pigs in blankets and all the rest of it. But I don't know. I was just really up for running. Like, it was nothing to do with, like, you know, David Goggins style, like, be tough and be disciplined because it's Christmas Eve and you've got to run. It was just
Yeah,
I just wanted to run. So
that's a good sign. You're finding your mojo again. Like, training isn't difficult to execute, so that's probably a really good place to be in, looking to the weeks ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's nice when you start getting that mojo back and you're looking forward to even just easy runs. So yeah, this was an easy 5 miles again, 4:34 per K. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. It's unbelievably peaceful at that time of night. It got me thinking I should do this more often, but it's not massively practical doing your runs at 9 o'clock in the evening.
Definitely not.
But yeah, so that was Saturday, that was Christmas Eve. And then Christmas Day, similar to you, Ben, we had family coming around quite early. And you know, when you've had a couple of beers and you've eaten your Christmas dinner, like, I intended to run that day. But yeah, the day just runs away from you on Christmas, doesn't it? Before you know it, it's like 7 o'clock and you're falling asleep on the sofa. So yeah, I decided just to embrace the festivities and call it there for the week. So that was my week, which was a staggering 39.6 kilometers.
He's back,
But
baby.
yeah, so I'm still operating at about 40% capacity compared to normal. But it's the first week where I sort of just got through it and enjoyed running again. And it felt decent enough. I got a little session in there and some steadier running. So yeah, happy days.
Trending in the right direction.
Yes, I think so. Although we're recording this on a Wednesday morning now, a little bit later than last week, and I've got a session to do when we finish this, and it is absolutely miserable outside. So
Oh no.
I'm hoping you guys are gonna give me some motivation. I'm gonna leave this fired up to run some minute reps and the 2 mile tempo.
I reckon Callum's week will do just that.
Yeah, go on,
Yeah,
give me some
well,
juice, Callum.
tune in next week to find out if Tom does complete that session or not. We've left you there with a
Oh God.
cliffhanger. Yeah, so my week was so the week that we recorded the first episode, I got a little bit ill, had to have a few days off, bit of flu and stuff. Don't know if you remember that. So this week was kind of building back up, kind of doing a bit more of a base type thing again. So I had no doubles, slightly lower volume, but yeah, still some pretty good runs. So Monday did 8 miles, 8.02 miles at 6:49 a mile, just nice easy run. This was the first day when the weather went from being really cold to kind of surprisingly warm again. So it was really nice. All the snow had gone. I could get back on the normal routes, so that was good.
I was going to say, actually, I love that on this Monday, I think every single one of us referenced the weather. I think you and
Yeah.
Ben referenced it being hot
Bloody
and
boiling,
and I was dripping wet. So yeah, I appreciate that. We carried through the stereotype there.
Well, if you've got nothing else to put on your Strava, you can just look outside, don't you, and just see what there is. So Tuesday night I had a session. We had a really good group in Cambridge, actually, because a lot of the boys have come back from uni for Christmas. So Tom Keane pretty much towed me around for this whole session, which was 5 sets of 2 minutes and then 4 minutes. So we did a 2 minute rep, had 60 seconds off, and then a 4 minute rep. I actually got rid of the last 4 minutes though, because like I said, I was just ill-disciplined and did all the reps too fast, and was kind of at that point where I was like, I could probably do this rep, but I'm gonna really smash
Dig
myself if I
yourself a
do it.
hole.
Yeah, so I thought I'll just, you know, I don't have an ego at training, I'll just get rid of the last rep and watch them do it. But that was a good session. We're doing about 4:25, 4:30 miling for the 2 minutes,
That is
and
crazy.
then
What is
about
that
four.
in K pace?
Oh.
I need to have
Ooh,
a look at the splits here.
I've got no idea. It's probably about
And
two, two,
258,
two.
255, maybe even quicker.
Yeah, it's quicker than that. Definitely quicker than that, I think.
250 for the 2 minutes and around 255 for the 4 minutes.
Yeah,
That's so, some yeah, serious going.
That was a good session. So that was about 6.5 miles total for the session, average 5.18 a mile. So pretty good, like fartlek style. Tom Keane, by the way, so fit. Just been in Flagstaff for 5 weeks with Jake Whiteman, and everyone agreed. I've never seen anyone run around the loop that we use that quickly. So keep an eye out for him. He's in serious shape.
Nice.
And then we went to the pub actually after our training group, had a pizza and a pint, a little Christmas shindig.
Get together.
Yeah, just the one in true runner's style, and then cycled home. So that's the glamorous life of a aspiring athlete for you.
Oh, I absolutely love that. What a wonderful evening.
Yeah, great pizza as well, actually. Had a had a duck on it, which you don't normally get on a pizza.
Duck on a pizza?
It was like a hoisin duck style pizza. Yeah, it was
wow. Cool.
It's quite an edgy. Where on
earth are you eating?
How Christmassy?
What was it called? Carpenter's Arms. If you're ever in Cambridge, Carpenter's Arms, get yourself down. Tell them Big Callum sent you. They won't have a clue what you're talking about, because I've only ever been once. and then, so what are we on now? Wednesday. So slightly lower volume week. So I only had 5 points. Well, I did 5.71 miles, 6.43. So about 40 minutes. Normally, this is a bit of a longer run, kind of like 9 miles-ish. But just kind of recovering after the hard session the day before. Nothing really to report at all on that one, I don't think. Pretty boring route that I did as well. And then Thursday was some moderate running. So similar to how you, Tom, have the kind of either the progressions or sometimes you have like Andy likes doing 6 minute mile stuff, doesn't he? Like you might do 30 minutes of 6 minute miling. I always have some moderate running in the week. So this was 8 miles with the last two at moderate. And moderate for me is similar to you. Don't really look at my watch. I have a speed limit of 5.50 a mile. He doesn't like me going any quicker than that. Kind of, like, get told off because then it drifts into, like, actually working, you know, a bit harder. So, kind of anywhere between 5.50 and 6.10, 6.15, depending on how fresh I feel. And this must have been good because it says it did it at 5.50. So, that was just 8.18 miles, 6.30s. Then it had a really wet session on Friday. Absolutely chucked it down. At the track. In my shiny new Vaporflies, courtesy of a certain sports retailer out there, which are great, by the way. Great shoes. Now, I would never choose them off the shelf, but when I had them on, I thought, I am the guy wearing these shoes. I feel
they are snazzy.
Do you know what? Yeah, this colourway, right, this Ekiden colourway, it's a weird one because I don't like how it looks like on e-com images, on the website. I don't like how it necessarily looks in hand either. It's a bit garish. It's a bit too green. Agreed. But on foot, in that little video that you put up on Instagram, if you hammer in those 400s, they looked divine. They look lovely.
Yeah. No, they do look, they look great. There's something to be said about, you know, when you wear nice kit and you feel like you're going to approach the session well. I always feel like if I put on some decent kit, I'm ready for it. But yeah, this was really, really well, actually. And fair play, my girlfriend Alice actually had the day off work, so she came down to the track to do a little session herself. And I gave her a session to do, and 2 days later, she was still absolutely battered. Right? She went out for an easy run, and she was like, my pace is so much slower than usual. I'm like, absolutely. Like,
it broke her.
I think she like had some lactic acid for the first time in about 10 years in her legs. So bless her.
Love it.
But good trooper session, Alice.
Shout out to Alice.
Tough love, that is.
Yeah, but my session was 3 sets of 8 200s, so basically, 3 sets of 8 200s in about 29-30 seconds, so seems quite fast, but I always find with a 200, like a 30-second rep, by the time you've kind of realised that you're running the rep, it's almost finished, if you know what I mean. 30 seconds, it's pretty easy to recover from, and that was with a 200 jog in between, and the 200 jogs in about a minute, so it's kind of like a fartlek, really, 30 seconds on, a minute off, and a bit of a bigger rest between the sets. But that was good to do something slightly faster, and it's kind of just some like economy work, not going to get really fit from it, but it's just like reminding the body at this time of year that it needs to be able to still run fast. Pretty good session.
So that's like 4 minute mile pace, slightly faster than four minute mile.
Well, 30 seconds is 4 minute. He's like 4.01 or something, I think, because the mile's slightly longer, isn't it? So, yeah, around 4 minute mile pace. But as I said, like holding it for 30 seconds, you know, at this time,
isn't too uncomfortable.
Yeah, if you do it for a 400, that makes you think, like, oh, bloody hell, how have I done this, you know, four times without a rest? But for 200, I find that you're just under that level before it starts to really bite, kind of like you're coming into the home straight and you're like, oh, I'm nearly done with this rep. And then maybe that's when you start to feel a bit of fatigue. But no, I was pretty pleased with that session.
Oh, looks like a good one.
Yeah,
I'd love to give that one a go myself, actually.
Yeah,
200's a good fun, aren't they? They're, like you say, they're over fast enough that you can recover nicely, but it just feels so fun running at that sort of speed. Like, I love it.
Yeah, and it suits different people, different, like, you know, people different responders. So, like, I'm quite good. If I've got a session where I've got a lot of small recoveries, I'm pretty good at that sort of thing. Whereas if I have much longer reps with longer recoveries, that's where I'll struggle. So any kind of 30 seconds and then I get a rest, I'm pretty, you know, my fitness is good in that sense. But if you gave me, say, one of your marathon sessions, Ben, where you're doing, you know, a 2 mile rep and then a longer recovery, that's where I'd struggle a little bit more. So yeah, I guess it just depends. In my cool down I had some moderate as well. That's something that I do after I've had any kind of faster session. Normally it's like 3 miles with the middle mile being at that moderate kind of, like I said, 6-10 pace. That's just to flush the legs out a bit, kind of find that I recover a little bit better if I do that. But it is the most, like, frustrating thing to finish your session and have to do that. Not enjoyable. So Saturday we on now? Yes, must be. Yeah, I was back in Leeds on Saturday, home for Christmas, see my family and stuff. So just went out with JB, Jonathan.
Jonathan Ball.
Jonathan Ball, legend of the game. We could do a full episode on JB, but we'll save it. That was 6.73 miles at 7:22s. What I noticed, I don't know if you noticed this, lads, but when you are used to running somewhere flat and then you go back somewhere hilly, it's carnage on your legs. I was running kind of like 40 seconds a mile slower than I would when I'm in Cambridge, but at the same sort of effort level, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
Which I just felt
just purely because of the terrain.
Yeah, but that's where you got to just, like you said, go off effort, because if you think, oh no, I always need to run 6:40s, then, you know, my heart rate would have been so high on this run, so... good to get that in. And then Christmas Day, unlike you guys, I actually did run, not because I'm a legend, but because like Christmas is just not that exciting. Like you said, like, we all get up a little bit later in the house. I've always done the park run in the morning, so I had my long run to do. So yeah. I just thought I'll meet up with the guys, do a few miles before the park run, do the park run, and then a couple afterwards. And it was only it was 12-mile long run, so it wasn't that long. That was 12 miles, 6:32, mainly because I had a 15:50 park run in the middle, which dropped the average. All the easy running was actually, you know, well in the seven-minute miling. So, defended the old Christmas Day park run title, which is a, you know, hey. make or break for Christmas, really.
Highlight of the year.
It's very prestigious, that.
Yep.
Congratulations. What's the course like down in Leeds?
It's brutal. It's really hard. I think there's a website out there that actually ranks all the park runs in, like, difficulty, and I'm pretty sure it's like it's in, like, the top 30 or 40. You have to just go up a massive hill 3 times.
Sounds delightful. So
it's not great, but it's great atmosphere, like seeing people on Christmas. They get about 500 people down, and reindeers and Santas and all sorts. So,
who are these two handsome chaps you've got on your Strava?
You've got if you're looking at my Strava now, people, pull it up. You've got JB on the left.
In the Santa hat,
yeah, and then you got John on the right, John Hobbs. John he's getting on a little bit, but he was a great runner. He's run some serious times. I think he ran 2:29 or 2:30 marathon when he was like in his 40s, so pretty solid time.
Good man,
impressive stuff.
But yeah, so that was a total of 62.2 miles, so fair bit of running. Building back again this week, hopefully for a little bit more, and good to be not ill and to be back on it.
Amazing. 100 kilometres for those who run in kilometres. That's pretty good going. Nice to see the bars going in the right direction on Strava.
Yeah, I know, right? I kind of tapered down for like the last 5 weeks for one reason or another. But
I think you were getting ready for that Christmas park run. Make sure you get the dub.
Yeah, that'll be it.
And tapered for it.
So yeah, good week overall. Pretty pleased with it.
Good stuff.
Solid.
Right, shall we move on to some listeners' questions?
Yeah, go on.
So just for context, if you would like to submit some questions to the podcast, you can do so via the email, runitthreewayspodcast@gmail.com. And this week we have had 6 emails. So I'll start off with an email from Rory. Now, Rory was just wanted to send us an email to say thanks for the first podcast. He absolutely loved it, which is exactly what we like to hear. And he also broke the 18-minute barrier this week at his local park run. It was a frosty morning, apparently, And it's the first time he's gone under 18 minutes. So a shout out to Rory for the first listener segment. And he's got his sights set on 17:30 for New Year's Eve. So we look forward to hearing whether Rory does that on New Year's Eve. He's looking to take another 30 seconds off, which, you know, it can be done, but it's a tough ask.
Conditions are going to play a big part in that, aren't they? Conditions and mental tenacity. Go on, Rory. Yeah,
condition of the liver on New Year's Day will be a big one.
But moving on to our first question is from Jacob. He says, a quick question for you to discuss. If your shoe comes off during a cross-country race or even a track or road race, should you stop and put it back on or continue barefoot?
What a great question. I wasn't expecting that.
So there's a great video from a few years ago. I think it's Adam Hickey, who is like just a monster on the cross. And in the national, I'm pretty sure he finished in the top five and he had to stop, and he stopped on a bench and put his spike back on. He's still
incredible.
In the top five.
Yeah, literally the whole field ran past him and he still managed to catch up with everyone. Yeah. So.
But tip for cross country, just tape up your spike so that can't happen. Just put loads of duct tape around it if you think there's even a chance that could happen. I guess it depends how far in the race you are, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. If it happens in the first 100 metres, you're going to want to stop and put that back on, because that's going to be very painful, if anything else, to get around the whole of the course without a shoe on your foot. But if it happens at the very end of a cross-country race, you know, coming around the last corner, you probably just want to go for it. That's what I'd do anyway.
Yeah, it's a heroic finish, that, as well. And for you, Ben, it'll be fantastic content.
Oh, of course.
The last 100 metres or so, you're doing it without a spike. What? Yeah.
It's a get out of
jail free card. You could do with that.
I can't say that's ever happened to me, though, that my shoes come off. I think if you do your laces up tight enough and go through all the procedures, you should be absolutely fine. But you never know if this might happen to you. So
I'm interested to know why he's asked that question. Like, I wonder if he's... Do you think he's actually preparing in case that happens to him?
Just
or
in case. Interested
in what we would do, or... I wonder if he's settling a dispute between his friends or something like that. It's a very interesting... We're a weird group of people to ask that question to. I feel like, you know, have anyone got any history with shoes coming off? I don't know.
But thanks for the question, nonetheless.
Yeah, I guess it depends, though, actually. Think about it. If you're wearing... I think it depends on whether you're wearing spikes or... Like, most people, like your average punter who's knocking about cross-country, they're probably wearing trail shoes, right? Which are far more likely to come off your foot if you're stuck in the bog than a spike is. So I think that would make it a little bit more, if there'd be a bit more consideration there, to be fair, because a trail shoe is far more likely to come off than a spike.
100%.
Okay, so moving on to our second question, and that is from Luke this week. And this is quite an interesting one, actually. One I think we could definitely have some good conversation, probably even write a whole new episode on, to be honest with you. But he says, it's a bit of an odd question, but I'm relatively new to the running scene. I want to find some ways of making a career involved with it. I don't suppose you've got any ideas or even touch on this in the podcast, like employment pathways within the running world.
That's a great question as well.
We've all sort of got our own little niches of how we make a living, basically running in the running world, as Luke refers to it as. It's a pretty interesting question, I thought.
I think, Callum, you go first on this, because I know that you've got your Instagram posts, they're always insightful, but I think you've got one quite specifically on how, I guess it's more catered towards like high level runners, but how runners can monetize their social channels and how you can make a living from it.
Think it's important to know that, like, I think you need to set out your priorities from the start, right? So like with me, running and being fast and wanting to compete is always my priority. So if I could do that without needing any kind of like social presence and stuff, then I probably would have some social media just for fun, and I still like putting out the content that I do, but I wouldn't be as commercially driven by it, if you see what I mean, in terms of like wanting to actively reach out and work with brands and, you know, things like that. But if you're not at a level where your running can just do the talking, if you see what I mean, then like this listener's asked, you do need to actually think about how you might be able to make it a quote-unquote job, or at least cover its own costs. And in today's world, like giving yourself something outside of running is pretty important. So what value, I always ask people, like, what value can you offer to a certain niche of audience out there? So whether you're a younger athlete and actually you know, say you're 20 years old, your audience might be loads of 17 and 18 year olds that are like, oh, I really want to do what he's done, you know, and go to uni and do this or go to America. So that's your audience, and you need to work out what's valuable to them. So what mm-hmm. unique insight can I give to them? And I think if you just follow that general pattern, you'll pretty much work out and naturally find out who you're useful to and who like engages with your content. And from there, your growth could be pretty exponential, right? Because as long as you're providing value and giving people something that they find interesting, then they're going to keep coming back for it. And then as you gradually build, that's where you, Ben, especially this year, you've seen kind of one door leads to another door leads to another door. Then you meet this person who introduces you here, and kind of how you can then make money from it is kind of the easy bit. It's building up the audience of people that actually care about you and what you're doing. That I think is more difficult, but unless you just jump into it and give it a go, I think you're never really going to know. So people sat there thinking, oh, what shall I do? The best thing is just to start putting stuff out there, but post stuff that you think is genuinely going to be valuable. So you guys, I've said to you guys before, I'm not big into, I wear my running shoes, obviously, but I'm not really big into the specifics of shoes, the stack heights, the foams, the, all this sort of stuff. So it would be kind of weird of me to produce content specifically about that, if you see what I mean, because I don't find it super valuable or useful. Whereas I prefer posting about the commercial side of running or about training, because that's what I would find valuable. Whereas you guys are kind of on the flip side, you know, there's a lot of people that look at you guys for really important shoe advice, things that they want to know, and that's their kind of real interest. So you cater to them. Do you see what I mean? So I think just finding who looks up to you, as cheesy as that sounds, or like finds you valuable, is like ultimately underpins everything before you can even think about making any money.
Yeah, 100%. Well, really well said, Callum.
I think as well, to put a pretty different spin on it too, like it's difficult without knowing the specifics, but obviously a lot of what Callum spoke about is regarding content, digital content, putting stuff out there on the internet that people are going to consume, find value in, and then come back for more, and your audience grows as a result of that. But I think there's another option to monetize it within the actual running industry. The absolute best place to start, in my opinion, really is to get yourself even if it's just for a year or so, get yourself a job in like a local running shop, and just learn how the industry works. Like, that for me was the number one like biggest thing, and it's the only reason why I think I'm kind of in the position with running that I am now, to be honest. Is from, I worked in a couple of different running shops for about 2 years in total, and just immersing yourself in that world where you're constantly surrounded by runners. Your job is to speak to runners of all different abilities, from couch to 5k runners to people who have never run a step in their lives, up to decent level club runners. You know, having those conversations, like learning about what different runners like, is super valuable. And you also learn a lot about shoes, right? And the running brands and what their missions are, because you'll get tech reps, people who, their whole job is to go to running shops and to educate people on, the specifics of a new shoe, what it's for, what customer it's designed for. And if you ask the right questions and you show enough interest, you'll naturally just get to speak to more and more people who are higher up that food chain when it comes to product design and footwear development and all that kind of good stuff.
The last thing you just said there is really important. This listener is already ahead of the game by sending a 100% message to a podcast. And I think in the running space, most people, maybe the corporate world might be slightly different, but most people recognize that running is a quite a small space. And as such, they really want to support people that are trying to get into it. So I think in running, compared to a lot of other sports, if you ask people things, they're way more likely to respond or to give you an opportunity or to throw something your way, whether it's asking an elite how they train. And they're probably like, oh, like, you're not going to ask Marcus Rashford how he scores goals. He's not going to respond, is he? But like, you could message Mark Scott. He might actually respond to you. Do you know what I mean? And I think it's the same in like the business side of things. If you message an agent and ask for this, or you message someone who deals with scholarships to America, and even if you're not looking to go ahead or you don't know if it's for you, just asking the questions, you're going to get so much more back in running. Because I think people do support each other a lot more than other industries, or it seems that way.
Yeah. I found definitely from speaking to people through work, like once your foot's in the door in this industry, once you're, you know, a tech rep for Saucony or a tech rep for whatever brand it may be, which is a fairly entry level job really for these brands, most people who get into that industry stay in it. So they might go from either one job to another, get promoted within a specific brand, or they might go across from one brand to another, which, because that brand is bigger, there'll be more money and more opportunities and access to different athletes and all that kind of stuff. And I think just from getting your toes in that industry in the first place, you'll, like what you said, Callum, you'll figure out where your value lies. You'll figure out where you add the most value to running as a whole. So yeah, just get involved, reach out to people, search for running jobs online. You know, like I say, tech rep role is probably, I know that Ben, you were a part-time tech rep for a little while.
Still
weren't
am.
You?
Yeah,
still are. So
it's a great way in.
Good stuff. Great question. I like that question.
Yeah, we could probably talk for hours on that topic, but I think you guys pretty much covered it. My advice would just be, if you are somebody who's looking to go down sort of like the more social media route, like I've done through YouTube and Instagram, it's basically just start documenting what you're doing, start to tell people about your journey, your story. As boring as you may think it seems at the beginning, as soon as people start following along, it can be pretty fascinating to follow along with someone's running journey. So yeah, give it a go, see how that pans out for you, but yeah, in short, there's lots of different ways into the running industry. I mean, we're all still sort of figuring it out ourselves, but yeah, hopefully that gives you a bit of help there. Moving on to the third and final question for this segment this week is from Sammy. Now this is a really quick fire question. He says, if you could have one training session with three athletes of your choice, who would you choose and why?
Ooh.
Oh, bloody hell.
Quite a difficult one, isn't it?
So you can do one run.
One session with three athletes.
And are we the same ability, or for the sake of this, are we the same ability as them for this session? Like, we're actually running together.
No idea. Okay, I guess that, well, you'd want to be able to keep up, wouldn't you? Otherwise, it'd be pretty pointless.
If we're in this imaginary world, if we're in this imaginary world where, say, like, we're all happen to be doing every rep together, I would go back to like Nike Oregon Project days, something like that.
Yeah.
And I would have like, have you seen that session where Galen Rupp does like three times a mile in like sub 4 or whatever? I'd like get him, you know, maybe get Farah.
Yeah.
I'd probably get Farah, him, and just some, I don't even care who else, Craig Engels or some other Donny that can join in. And
that
then
sounds great.
We just smash a session, but a session that's so good that it goes like completely viral, that it's so good, you know, like,
yeah,
you know, as unbelievable as it probably was in Nike Oregon Project. But there you go.
It's Callum Elson tagged on the back of Mo and Galen Rupp.
Yeah, I can think of loads of like nice answers, like, oh, I'd go on the trails with Prefontaine, but realistically, I just want to smash some mile reps with Galen Rupp back in the day.
Brilliant. I think for me, it would have to be a classic threshold session in nice snowy Norway, I reckon, with the Ingebrigtsen brothers. That would just be incredible for me to be part of that and see how they train, get some lactate testing after every rep, having the Mr. Ingebrigtsen, what's his name? Is it Gert? The father,
Gert,
back in the day, shouting at us in Norwegian as we run around the track in probably freezing cold conditions.
That would be sick.
That would be pretty special, and that would be my pick, I reckon.
Yes. So you boys have both gone for like blood and guts type angle on this. I reckon
it'd
be
you can't choose me and Ben, Tom.
Oh dear. I think like a solid long run, like a proper 35K, you know, hilly long run.
Nice chat.
Some of the Aussie lads would be good fun. I think that's probably the best bang for your buck that you could get. Because the Ingebrigtsens, you're not going to be having much chit-chat, are you? You're going to be getting screened.
Yeah,
you're going to be pricking your finger every 5 minutes, taking lactate readings. And with the Oregon Project lot, Callum, you're going to be pricking yourself with a different kind of needle, probably. Whereas with the Aussie guys, you know, you're just going to have good fun, I reckon.
Banter.
Who
are your three athletes then?
Three athletes is going to be tricky. I reckon if you went for a long run with Steve Monaghetti, you'd probably get more chat than you would with three other people anyway. Because if you've I don't know if you've listened to any of the podcasts that he's done or any of the interviews that he's done, but that man can
Yeah.
talk and he's got a story for every day of the week. So a nice hilly long run with Steve Monaghetti would probably be my pick, I think.
Lovely. Okay, so that pretty much wraps up the listeners' questions. As I said already, thanks for sending those in. If you want to do so, you can do so at runitfreewayspodcast@gmail.com. I'm sure we'll have plenty more questions to discuss next week. But moving on to some running news. This week, probably in our circle, the biggest news is Ellis Cross. He's signed a professional running contract with Hoka, which is pretty incredible to see someone go through sort of the club scene. He famously beat Mo Farah at the, was it the Vitality 10K this year?
Yeah, correct. Yep.
Yeah.
And now he's gone on to sign his first professional contract with Hoka. So yeah, congratulations, Ellis, if you happen to be listening. But it's pretty big running news this week.
Yeah,
That's
and I know.
massive.
Yeah, I was chatting to Ellis about it, and I know that the contract runs at least up until the next Olympics as well. So that's like
Wow,
great that a
brilliant.
brand believes in him enough, you know, to say actually we'll give you a good crack at trying to get to Paris in whatever event that'll be. So yeah,
Yeah, it'd be
good on
really
Hoka
interesting.
for doing that.
And I know we talk a lot about shoes these days and technology and all that kind of stuff, but I think for the first time in a good few years, now is a great time to be sponsored by Hoka as a brand, like with Rocket X2 coming out
Yeah,
in
that
early
looks like it's
2023.
it looks good that shoe actually.
Yeah, it's a proper super shoe, right?
Yeah, it
They've
looks
got
like
all
it's
the
going to be
ingredients there.
competitive.
Exactly, which is all you want in this day and age. There's so many good shoes out there that all you really want is the brand that you're sponsored by to be competitive and have an equal. And I think with the Rocket X2, Hoka have got that. So it's not all about the shoes, but for an athlete like that trying to run fast, it's a big deal, massive deal.
Yeah.
So yeah, fair play, that's huge.
Any other running news you want to cover this week, guys?
What have you got, Callum?
One person being signed to a brand, Mark Scott, he announced, didn't he, that he's still with Nike, but he's left Bowman,
Yeah, that's some really interesting
which
news.
is quite big. He, according to him, he wants to be based more in the UK. He's kind of done his time out in America. He's been out there for 10 years now, so wants
Yeah.
to do something a little bit different. And then he also said that he is moving towards the roads as well. So I guess Bowman's a pretty track-based group, like Grant Fisher. Those guys are really, you know, their peak is in the summer, if you will, for the Worlds and Olympics on the track. But I guess Mark wants to move more towards the roads, which you would think would mean marathon, because no one really moves to the road for 10K, right? Like, he's going to do halves or marathons. So
Yeah.
it'd be interesting to see what he does, if he joins a group, if he trains by himself. But yeah, that'd be good to have another, like we said with Emil recently, it'll be good to have some good British names on the road to kind of mix it with those top groups of major races.
Yeah, for sure. Do you reckon he'll be able to get close to the British marathon record over the next few years? Mo Farah's 205.
I don't know. It's a massive jump, isn't it? It's like, think so many guys can run a 60-minute half marathon
Yeah.
that don't even get, you know, close to running a
Yeah.
204, 205. It's like, that's why it's so freaky when people have only run a 60-minute half and then they suddenly run a 202 marathon. It is a bit dodgy, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the jump up is so much more. But yeah, to be honest, like, you know, I'm team Emil anyway, so I think whatever Mark runs, Emil can run fast. Emil can run faster. So if he does break it, then it'll probably go broken again. But yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting on the British elite front.
Yeah, for sure. It'll
Yeah.
definitely make things a little bit more interesting, especially over the longer distance road races in the years to come. If Mark does decide to go more towards the marathon, that could be really interesting to watch that unfold.
Yeah, I think obviously it doesn't correlate perfectly, but if you look at what Brett Robinson just did, running, he's run sub 60 for the half and ran 207 like a couple of weeks back. So yeah, it would be really nice to see Emil and Mark in that sort of ballpark.
Yeah.
Definitely sub 210, I think it's got to be on the cards.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah,
Yeah,
that'd
100%.
be a solid debut that.
Yeah, definitely. And the other running news I was going to mention was Sweat Elite related, which is quite interesting, I think, because everyone will know Sweat Elite from having like the videos that go up for training. Obviously, they have like the written content on the website as well.
Yeah.
And they recently launched what they're calling a coaching academy. So I don't really know what the specifics in and outs are. There's like a, you can sign up to a, you know, like an early bird like release thing to get more information. But from what it looks like, it could be pretty cool, because obviously they've got a pretty, well, they've got amazing connections with top athletes. So I wonder whether the athletes will become the coaches or whether, you know, Matt and him, he's going to coach himself. I don't know how it's going to work, but I think that's one to keep an eye on, because if that rolls out successfully and it is some of the athletes that are, that do become the coaches, then I think that's a model that will be copied by a lot of people out there to kind of, you know, help support their income or give them something to do outside of training themselves. Because, you know, they've shown that they can give massive exposure to people who, you know, wouldn't get it otherwise. So yeah, keep an eye on that one, because I think that could be quite interesting.
Sure. Yeah, and exciting. One final thing I've got written down here to touch on is the Boston Marathon. The lady who won the Boston Marathon was disqualified. Was that something you mentioned, Tom?
Yeah, I think I stuck it in WhatsApp to you. It's Diana Kipchoge, I think her name is.
She wasn't the winner this year, was she? That was the Under Armour.
2021.
21, right.
Boston Marathon, she got stripped of, which, yeah, I mean, it's tricky, isn't it? It means the title technically now goes to Edna Kiplagat, but
yeah.
I think, Callum, just before we started recording, you were talking about some doping related stuff. It's just a shame that it seems to be so frequent now that you're getting, you know, big runners, people winning major marathons, getting stripped of titles left, right and centre.
Yeah,
it's a real shame. My main problem with it is, obviously outside of the actual fact that they're cheating, is that how it overshadows all the other performances. Because now you can't, it's a little bit like when VAR got brought into football and now you can't celebrate a goal because you're thinking, hang on a minute, it might get ruled out.
Yeah, we need to see if that's...
It's the same with the performances. Someone does something amazing and the first thing you see is, oh, I bet he's not actually done that, or I bet she's not actually done that. Whereas we should be saying, you know, like, wow, bloody hell, like, that's fantastic.
Incredible performance.
There's nothing wrong with it. So yeah, that's the main thing for me. It kind of takes a lot of the enjoyment out of the races, especially when there's a correlation for, you know, certain teams or certain countries and stuff like that, where it seems more rife than others. I think it's a real problem.
Sure.
Yeah. I think the last bit of news, to put a more positive spin on things, was the women's park run record went down.
Of course, yeah.
On Christmas Eve, Melissa Courtney Bryant, New Balance athlete, she ran 15:31 in pool, fastest ever time by a woman in park run. So there we go. There's a bit of...
She broke Samantha Harrison's record.
Yeah, she did.
It was only about 3 weeks old, wasn't it, or something like that?
Yeah, maybe less. Yeah, maybe even less. Yeah.
So yeah, I reckon, Samantha, if you're listening, you need to get out there on New Year's Eve and take that one back.
Oh, she's definitely listening.
100%.
I was going to say, actually, Ben, did we get any emails from any mums?
Any mums? I don't think so. They all look like... guys have messaged this week, but yeah, if there's any mums out there, if you didn't watch last week's episode, you're probably wondering what the hell are you guys talking about. But yeah, we'd love to hear from you over on the email.
To be fair, when you sent those analytics over from the first episode in WhatsApp, it didn't look like there were too many females listening in general.
Not too
to be
many.
Honest. So, but don't worry. I reckon going forwards, we'll get, when we get some guests and we start having some interviews and stuff, we can we can definitely rectify that, can't we, with some cracking female guests.
100%.
Certainly can. All right, guys, that pretty much wraps up episode 2 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. Thanks for joining me again, guys, and we'll see you next week with a bit more of a New Year's Eve special or New Year's special. Is that the plan, guys?
Yeah, we'll work something out. It's actually my birthday on New Year's Eve, so maybe we can have a little celebratory episode.
There you go. Down the pub.
Yeah, we're gonna duck pizza and crack open
some duck pizza. Yeah,
life on the carpenter's arms.
Well, love it. Anything exciting? I know it's Wednesday already, so it's a bit weird to say anything you got coming up this week. But anything particularly exciting for you boys?
Well, I guess Ben, you already had a race this week, technically, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, so we'll cover that. That was definitely a highlight of my week, if not year. So I look forward to talking you through that one.
Nothing of note for me yet, really, but hopefully something exciting happens. Tom, yourself?
Hopefully moving house at some point in the next week or two. So that would be nice.
New year, new house.
I say nice. All I got for Christmas is a shoe rack and an oven glove. So,
mate, I'll upgrade you there. I got some kitchen knives and a tea towel. So
did you?
Yeah,
that's cutlery. Pretty exciting.
That's a bumper Christmas present.
Yeah, out of my week, actually.
Oh yeah, but other than that, I've got to drag myself outside in a little while and get a session done, which I'm not
Yeah, well,
massively looking forward to, but
yeah, pingers
is
over
what
a
it is.
message with how it goes, and yeah, enjoy the rest of your running, boys, this week.
Yeah,
Yeah, really.
perfect.
All right, guys, speak to you soon.
Cheers, lad.
Nice one, chaps.
Thank you.